Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Scott Klinger, who is an Associate Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and the Policy Director for Wealth for the Common Good. He is a chartered financial analyst and previously worked as a security analyst and portfolio manager for Walden Asset Management. Back in April, he was one of the authors of a report called Unnecessary Austerity, Unnecessary Shutdown. Welcome to Background Briefing, Scott Klinger.
Thank you, Ian.
And I went into the archives because to listen to our last discussion back in April, Scott, you that report that you came out with then, Unnecessary Austerity, Unnecessary Shutdown, really recently warned that the debt crisis being hatched in Congress would lead to unnecessary austerity and to a double dip recession. And how did it happen? Why didn't somebody stop this? I guess in a way, the question would, why did the president allow it to happen? Or couldn't he stop it? Because him and the Democrats are going to suffer. It looks as if the markets are saying they're not. This S&P thing, I think, has got people distracted. I think the real issue here is the markets are saying you've taken $2 trillion out of already a sick economy. It's going to, we're heading for a double dip recession.
Yes, it is a distraction. And it's interesting to note that while the stock market was down staggeringly today, that the bond market was, I think, closed up even a little bit. So you would think if the debt was really in trouble that the bond market would have been just as panicked or more panicked than the stock market. So this is sadly a part of a continuing story of manufactured crises to cut benefits for middle and working class Americans. It started really 20 years ago, and it's accelerated through the recession of 2 years ago, and now today. It's just been one crisis after the next, and it's sad. It's sad to have published a report that has come so close to predicting the future in a bad way.
So is this Naomi Klein's shock doctrine? Is this what's in play here, where crises become the opportunity for these mendacious forces who want to get their way?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had been thinking about her book as a frame for this over the last couple of weeks, and I think that's the right analogy. We think all the way back to when President Obama came into office and we had the failure of Lehman Brothers and the world was going to collapse if we didn't bail out the big banks with trillions of dollars of bailouts. And, and then it continued to a lesser extent last December when unemployment benefits were about to run out, and they were held hostage to extending the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy, and then once again we had this debt crisis that escalated the disaster scenario that if we didn't extend the debt ceiling that the U.S. would default and the world would end as we know it. So it's sad that we keep falling for the same familiar drama.
And of course, the old adage is that the Chinese character for crisis and opportunity is one and the same. But in this case,
but our response to the crisis is cutting off our opportunity because.
But it becomes opportunity for those who. It becomes an opportunity for those who provoke the crisis.
Yeah,
and it becomes a loss for everybody else.
Yeah, loss of our opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still reeling in shock from. We just had a conversation about economic literacy, which is desperately needed. What do you think is going to be the teachable moment, Scott Klinger?
Well, I think this is starting to be a wake-up call for people. And, you said earlier you reflected on why didn't someone like the president or Congress stop it. I don't think it's going to be the president or Congress that stop it. I think it's going to be the people that stop it. And, we see what's happening in other countries with people showing up in the streets in large number and saying enough. We see what's happening in Wisconsin of, protesting and then having recall elections. That story needs to get written on a larger canvas for the whole country.
It may be written on a the only people who are going to write on a large canvas are the people. The mainstream press are the ones that keep putting out all of this nonsense about we have to get our fiscal house in order. They are completely echoing the Republican line. And I'm talking about all across the media spectrum.
Absolutely. And the S&P Standard & Poor's in being the debt rating agency that cut the U.S. debt rating has really played a funny role in this, because they shifted from being the chief cheerleader for speculative investment over the last decade, missing the problems with Enron and others, and certainly missing the huge problems with the subprime lending crisis that drove Lehman out of business and sent the banking industry into a death spiral. And now they've turned into the austerity police, much like a role that the IMF would play in developing countries in terms of, you know, demanding greater cuts. And it's like Wall Street is holding Main Street hostage. Wall Street's saying, we won't give you any capital unless you play by our rules and cut the benefits that go to small business and middle class and working class people.
So where is the political organization? I mean, one of the things that I find extraordinary, Scott Klinger, again, co-author of the report back in April, Unnecessary Austerity, Unnecessary Shutdown. Where is the I'm so mystified as to how it is that a small group of right-wing zealots on the Republican Party, called the Tea Party, but it's essentially that's just an astroturf repackaging of the right wing of the Republican Party, albeit a clever, because everybody uses that term, Tea Party, but essentially a small group of far-right Republicans drove the Republican Party to the right, captured the national agenda, and extorted the entire economy into this near-death experience from which they have benefited and been rewarded. So where's the countervailing energy on the left?
Well, I think it's the fact that the rules have been shifted, right? And it's not just that there's a small number of people. It's a small number of people with a huge number of dollars, and those dollars have gone into not only campaign contributions, political investments in Washington, D.C., in both parties, but also in terms of buying the media, buying the storytellers. And, you know, we really need some different means of telling stories. We need ways of deepening our political knowledge and political literacy, as you said earlier, with some different stories that we tell one another, whether it's through community groups or church groups or labor groups. You know, we have to get back into a story that doesn't end with whatever is best for the corporations is good for me, because that's the story we've been told, and it hasn't worked out very well.
Well, we have a perfect front man for corporations running on the Republican ticket, and he just blamed the S&P downgrade of the United States' creditworthiness on Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. I'm talking about Mitt Romney.
Right, you know, and it's just...
I mean, is anybody behind... I mean, I guess I asked my previous guest, I said, well, you know, surely somebody should challenge this nonsense, but because I guess it's too early.
There's an interesting footnote to that kind of connects the dots to what I was just saying, is there's a corporation that was formed, I believe, late spring in Massachusetts, and it was incorporated anonymously, which is legal in the United States. There's a million corporations in the United States who you cannot find out their owner because they're anonymous. This corporation made $1 million contribution to Mitt Romney's campaign, which they could under the New Citizens United Supreme Court case, and then promptly disbanded, so it is no more. So this is exactly how the money is finding its way into politics, untraceable, unaccountable, and that's why the votes go against us. It's not enough to email your senator or representative or even pick up the phone and call anymore. That message isn't being recorded when the checks come in from $1,000 donors or more, or in this case, $1 million donor.
My understanding is that I understand this dichotomy that between the power of money and the power of votes, and that the fulcrum, the center, has moved to the point where money has more power than votes. But that's only because people don't vote. And already, after this debt ceiling sellout, the progressives are now talking about running a third party challenger in the primaries, which of course will end up with the same results that happened with Jimmy Carter, where Ted Kennedy damaged him, and then in the general, the progressives then voted for Anderson and helped elect Reagan. So we have that history of third parties where with Nader in 2000 in Florida, and before that Ross Perot, the Republicans still blame Ross Perot for electing Bill Clinton. I don't know that there's anything to be gained from that route, but what about just millions and millions of people? That's what you think is going to change it. Millions of people are just going to have to start showing up.
Yeah, well, look what happened. We had this huge fight over the debt ceiling. We're cutting, $1 trillion out of social programs primarily, and cutting deep into things that the vast majority of Americans have counted on and relied on. We've put Social Security and Medicare on the table, and we didn't cut one corporate tax break, not even a silly corporate jet deduction, which should be a no-brainer, an easy one, the oil subsidies, the ethanol subsidies, nothing, not a penny. So it's all on the people. And unless the people stand up and say, no, that's not the way it's going to be, we need different rules. This isn't laws of nature, laws of God that have caused this to happen. These are rules that we've allowed to be tipped badly against us and in favor of the very few at the top.
So do you think there's anything that could be done culturally? I mean, I'm speaking to you from Hollywood, right across the street from Universal Studios. And during the Great Depression, of course, they made films about silly heiresses in big estates, Philadelphia Story and all that kind of stuff. And not that was a good movie, but I'm saying there was this vicarious indulgence of wealthy characters, and so much of television is about who wants to be a millionaire, and it's all about it's all very mercenary. Is there a possibility that we could have a countervailing kind of cultural shift in this country to shame these, these idle rich, as Bill Gates' father said, you can't sail two yachts at the same time?
Right. You can't. And I was thinking about that today. I was in a bookstore and picked up a book about how Uncle Tom's Cabin changed the world back in the 1800s and how it really catalyzed the abolitionists, and it had reached far beyond America's shores. So I think the arts is a place that can inspire a different story. All this is about the stories we hold. And right. As long as we're going to hold a story that my ship is tied to the fortunes of
a billionaire, right? That's exactly the way that the working people have been told, that your fortune is tied to a billionaire's tax breaks. I thank you for joining us, Scott Klinger.
Thank you so much, Ian.
Again, Scott Klinger, Associate Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He's a chartered financial analyst, previously worked as a security analyst and portfolio manager for Walden Asset Management. And back in April, he was a co-author of the very prescient report, Unnecessary Austerity, Unnecessary Shutdown. So what did we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began with, of course, the crash of the stock exchange today, down 630 points, but it was preceded by the European markets, which tumbled. So we talked with a former correspondent with the Financial Times in Germany, Daniela Schwarzer, who basically, Germany is the one that's propping up the euro, and they're taking the major hit. And it was very interesting. She basically said that she thought that the European Central Bank maybe have staunched the immediate bleeding, but they haven't solved the problem. And that the problem is, curiously enough, a north-south problem, a divide between Southern Europe and Northern Europe, where the people in the north pay their taxes, the people in the south don't, at least the Greeks being a prime example. It's not the disease in Europe, which Joe Stiglitz and others that I mentioned predicted some time ago, that it'd be the Eastern European weakness and the borrowing in euros in the non-eurozone would create a default cascading through to the West. But in fact, the cascading is coming from the south up to the north. And I asked her about what kind of mechanisms can the Germans or the Europeans develop, because they're not like the United States, which has a Federal Reserve. They're a bunch of sovereign nations pooling their economy into one currency, and they don't seem to have any kind of rapid response mechanism. And she felt that they could develop, and I mean, she was extremely technocratic and very, very bright woman. I can't pretend to know all the details of what she said or understand them all, except to say that she thinks that they will staunch the bleeding. But then I asked her, well, will the patient survive? She said, well, that remains to be seen. Then we talked about the state of economic literacy in the United States following this debt ceiling debacle and the downgrading of the U.S. Debt by this S&P crowd, which has caused all this panic around the world. Pavlina Cheneva, a very bright woman, had some interesting stuff to say about the lack of financial literacy, how the mainstream press and the Republicans, and to some extent the White House, have been echoing so many economically illiterate notions. But curious enough, the public seemed to know. 82% of the public thought that what we should be talking about is jobs, not the deficit. And of course, we all know economics 101, that if you're having a recession, you prime the pump, you don't turn off the tap, and have the economy die, which is pretty much what they're doing, what this ridiculous austerity vote the other day guarantees. At the end of the day, though, she, you know, with Mitt Romney saying that the S&P downgrade of America's debt was entirely to do with Social Security, we simply just can't, it's not sustainable. And she basically said they've been saying that since the beginning of Social Security. And all that's about is Wall Street wants to get its hands on all that money. And Mitt Romney, of course, being a Wall Streeter, no, surprise, surprise. Finally, we spoke with Scott Klinger, who I spoke with back in April. He predicted all of this in a study he did called Unnecessary Austerity, Unnecessary Shutdown. And he basically said that the people of this country have got to rise up, that there's just no question the political class have failed us. They're bought by the powerful interests, and that the only way to turn America around is for the people not to form a third party, not to run a primary challenge, but to get out on the streets en masse. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.